Hey, Bobby Manning here. Welcome to a new Dome Theory. Once again, the Nate and Bobby show is here. And it's a group chat edition of Dome Theory still. Even though we only have two people, we'll call it that. It's conference finals time. It's May. We got a lot to talk about here. But we're going to start with the most shocking result of the NBA season. The Nuggets, the defending champs, blowing a 3-2 lead. Blowing a 20-point lead in Game 7, and there will be, for the sixth straight season now, a new champion in the NBA, the Wolves, who I like coming into this season, Nate. I didn't imagine this, but I like them. I like where they were going. I liked where they were pointing. And I always liked how they played the Nuggets. And they showed here that they were the toughest opponent for Denver. And they put it together in a great way here, defensively certainly, but also with the offense. Towns rising to the occasion. I'm very proud of him. And Edwards leading the team. You know, you hear it in his post-game commentary and everything else on the court. It's a great team. It looks like a young team that's on the precipice of getting to the finals. And they're certainly the favorites in this Western Conference Finals by a little bit over Dallas here. But are they a little too young to get the job done? Are Towns and Rudy trustworthy enough to get the job done? I mean, these are still questions I know certainly you have with them. And I have to some degree, too, once it gets to, let's say, like a Boston, Minnesota, if that's where this is going. But, man, you got to give them their flowers for beating the Nuggets. That was unbelievable, especially the Game 6, beating them by 45.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I've noticed throughout the series is definitely the impact of Mike Conley. If I'm not mistaken, they won all the games that he played in the series, and they lost all the games he was out in the series as well. So that just shows just the raw impact of Mike Conley, the leadership, having the chill vibe, understanding that he's been there before, and having that rub off on players who this may be like their first or second time in an NBA, in an NBA playoff scenario, such as Anthony Edwards, such as Jaden McDaniels, and there's plenty of more on that team. So I found that his calming presence to be the biggest takeaway from the Minnesota Timberwolves. Also, Anthony Edwards played really, really well throughout the series. He didn't play well in Game 7 necessarily, but Games 1 through 6, he was there, he showed up. And we can see that we have a new superstar in the making through that. On the Denver side, though, the one thing that I have to point out is Michael Porter Jr. I mean, he just didn't show up for the past, for the final four games, definitely. I wasn't able to check the first three. But I believe in the final four games, he combined to score 22 points in total in four games. And they're paying him a max contract. They're not paying him. They're paying him to score 22 points in a game. They're not paying him to score 22 points over the course of four games. And I think that was definitely the disappointment throughout the series. I thought Aaron Gordon did his thing. I thought Aaron Gordon had moments where he had more responsibility offensively, and he did a good job of rising to that occasion. Jokic was Jokic all series. Jamal Murray, however, like we knew coming in, he was a little bit injured, and we could see that calf kind of bothering him the first two games. But after that, he kind of found his rhythm. He was really, really hot at the first half of Game 7, but then in the second half, he didn't really show up. But that's probably where we would expect someone like Michael Porter Jr., who, again, is making max money, or at least at the time when he signed the contract, max money, to step up, and he just didn't do that. So if you're going to pay Michael Porter Jr. all that money and you're going to sacrifice bench depth for Michael Porter Jr., and he's only going to score 22 points over the course of four games, that's just not acceptable from Michael Porter Jr. And at the end of the day, the one thing that we suspected could potentially be a flaw, a fatal flaw of the Denver Nuggets, was the lack of depth, and it really showed in the series.
Certainly, and that was the fear when they lost Bruce Brown, and they tried to replace him through a variety of rookies, Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, I thought did some things during the year that were encouraging, but none of those guys showed up for this series at the very least. You try to get what you could out of Reggie Jackson again this year, and yeah, he just doesn't seem to have enough left at this point. Justin Holiday played quite a bit in this series, shot 40%. You mentioned Porter, the 37% shooting from him. So it was certainly the depth that won this series. And I know Lindo talks all the time about this being a depth game now. You're talking seven good guys on that Minnesota side, effectively there, that can give you some scoring, shooting, defense, whatever it might be. And on that Denver side, if Murray's struggling, it's just Gordon and Jokic out there. And Jokic goes 29, 12, and 8 here. Shoots 52 from the field. The three not really there for him in this series. Took 35, only hit 8. You know, so they tried to limit him to the twos and did it well. And, you know, I guess Murray was hurt to some degree with the calf there. So it brought us back to an earlier conversation we had with Jokic and these Nuggets, Nate, from years past, is does he have Murray and all of this help? At that point, they're a championship caliber team. If it's just a Jokic show, which it was in the series, with Gordon to some degree, you're probably a second round team. And that's tough for, you know, we've had these all time conversations with Jokic, and I've been curious here, like just how high of a level, especially after three MVPs in 2 years and arguably good enough seasons to win four in a row here. Can he reach the top 10 all time? Can he be in the conversation for the greatest ever when the time comes? You know, that's what we're starting to talk about with his output and production here, but you need multiple titles. And it's tough to, you know, have a chance here to win back to back. Good path, but not all able to get it done here. And health, obviously, part of that. But they're going to have to make some adjustments this offseason, as I know you've talked about. And maybe that does involve shopping Porter. It's certainly drafting and developing. Like, when you have a team this expensive and with this solid of a starting lineup, you're going to have to do that too. KCP, I think, is up for a new deal. So they're going to have to make a decision there. It's going to be some tough calls here. And, you know, when you have a team like the Celtics that's locked in for years to come, when you have a West that's this difficult to get through, it's going to be hard. You know, Jokic is what, 30 almost at this point? 29?
He might be 29. Season. He's between the range of 28 through 30.
So let's say like Curry, LeBron status. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough here from the win four titles. Like, you got to get to two first. And they couldn't do that this year, which is, you know, no knock on him. But if we're talking like you really want to become a top 10, top 5 player all time in Jokic's case, you got to start to rattle those off pretty quickly here.
Yeah, I mean, I think when we start talking about top 10, I don't think it's all based on titles. I think MVPs has a big say in this, and he has three of those. I think All-Star appearances, All-NBA appearances, I think those also factor in as well. Also, the way that he's able to elevate his team, like as we saw, as we just talked about, Michael Porter Jr. did not show up. And even then, they're still in a game seven, when really, based off the first two games, and especially after game six, they didn't look like they should be in a game seven at all. But they were there because of Jokic's brilliance. Overall, thinking about Jokic, there isn't a center who is better than him offensively all time. There isn't a player, you could argue there isn't really a player who is better than him all time when you think about the combination of being able to score at all three levels, also the passing ability that we see from Jokic as well.
More skilled, I'd say. Yeah. I mean, not better, but there's plenty of centers all the time better than him.
Well, I'm talking about just from a strictly talent basis. Like if we're building a skill set, yes. Like if we're building a team, like all time, Jokic might be one of the first players I pick because of how versatile he is and how well he could work with different players all time. So I don't think championships obviously definitely matter, but I don't think if he wins one, I don't think he doesn't win another championship because the team around him just isn't good enough for him to win another championship. I don't think that hurts his credibility in terms of being a top 10 player. I understand that everybody likes to be enamored by championships, but people forget that championships are more of a team thing than a player thing. It's really about being in the right situation. And the fact that Jokic even got one championship in Denver is impressive within itself. That's the first championship they ever had as a franchise. And the franchise has been around for decades.
Yeah,
so,
for sure. But guess who else can say that?
Who?
Giannis.
No, he can't.
He can't
because
say he got one
they have a championship
for a city that didn't
Milwaukee,
have one.
Milwaukee had a championship before.
Yeah,
Giannis
like 50
got there.
Years ago.
Still had a championship. Denver never had a championship. Never had a championship. Never.
But
like, not even close.
I'm saying their resumes effectively at that point would be largely the same.
No. I mean, Jokic has three MVPs. Giannis only has two. That's a big deal. I would argue that Jokic's ring was more impressive than Giannis's ring too. Additionally, when you look at the lineage of Bucks players, you think about Ray Allen, you think about Kareem, you think about the Oscar Robertson, you think about those three players. When you think about the Denver Nuggets, you think about Carmelo Anthony and who else? Who else do you really think about? So the franchises are in two different levels when you talk about all-time NBA legacy. And the reason why we can consider the Denver Nuggets in that category of a Milwaukee Bucks now in terms of the legacy of the franchise is solely because of Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, and Giannis.
The Bucks were already there.
They were in a bad spot. They were about to move out of Milwaukee, honestly.
They were, but you still can't ignore that they had arguably the best big man of all time in Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on their team, arguably one of the best point guards of all time in Oscar Robertson. Like, they have a history.
That was so long ago.
Still, though. Who, besides Carmelo Anthony, name another player who has impacted the league on a era scale from Denver. You can't do
it. Let's see what the reference says in terms of greatest Nuggets ever. Jokic, Dan Issel, who? Alex English, David Thompson, Byron Beck, Melo.
You can't even right now as it stands today, you can make the argument for, but it's not
they had fat leather.
For sure. It's not a for sure thing that Giannis is the best Buck of all time. It is a sure thing right now that Nikola Jokic is the best Denver Nugget of all time. For sure.
Well, the thing it's there not is even that a conversation. Giannis is going to stay in Milwaukee, you would think, longer than Kareem did. So he'll be able to expand on his legacy if they're able to get this thing right going forward here. They're both in similar spots, right? Because Giannis has this weird team in transition now, trying to make this Lillard thing work. The guys are getting older around him, Middleton and Lopez. And Jokic now, again, KCP, what are they going to do with him? How do you add talent to this team? Is Murray a reliable enough too with some of the health stuff there? And then, of course, the bench, which that's what really let them down here, the development of that bench. And these guys are still so young, but I thought I saw a little something with Watson during the year. You thought Zeke Nnaji might be a guy that could have grown into something by now to maybe back Jokic up a little bit. Brown, I don't really see it with Christian Brown. Like, I know he's a good, like, fill the gaps, make some shots kind of guy, but he's not Bruce Brown. And that's still what kills them. Maybe they can. I know you've talked about them maybe going back out there and getting him from Toronto. And one of the guys up there in Toronto actually reported that the Raptors are going to trade Bruce Brown this summer. So can you go out there and do like, would you give up Porter for Brown? I don't know.
You would need some more pieces to go along with Bruce Brown if you're going to give up Porter. Mainly, you'd need another starter, a quality level starter. And that's the thing. And that's why I'm so weary of handing out these big contracts to players who haven't really proven anything. Like, Michael Porter Jr. was drafted off of the strength of him potentially being instant offense, like being someone who was unstoppable in terms of scoring the ball. And obviously injuries have played a factor into that. But at the same time, you knew injuries were going to play a factor into it when you drafted him because he fell from number one to, I believe they got him at 15 or somewhere in the middle of the first round. And that was solely because of his injuries. So you knew that was going to be a factor coming in. It appears he has been healthier relatively recently, but it appears that injuries or like just something just isn't really clearly right. Sometimes I hate the shots that he takes too. Like, he'll be like completely open, or excuse me, completely guarded, and someone else will be completely open. And it's so obvious to see when you're watching the game that you should pass this guy, and Porter just puts up a dumb shot. Like, it's frustrating that he's making max contract money as a number three option and he can't even score more than 10 points in a playoff game. That's frustrating and unacceptable.
There's some Tobias Harris there for sure. And he had a good regular season, but man, he tailed off. Was it fatigue or the injury or whatever else underlying there? Because it was rough here. But the Wolves beat them up. And that's, I think I mentioned it last podcast we did a week or two ago. That's going to be something to watch here. If the Wolves win, it's because they embraced and executed that beat-em-up style defensively that the NBA has allowed midway through this year better than anyone else. And that's how they're going to have to beat the Celtics. And frankly, the Mavs first, these finesse, high-powered offenses, can you beat them up? Can you break them down? It's going to be a good test for them going against Dallas here. Who do you see as the favorite in that series?
I mean, it's tough. I as far as superstars on the court, you have Luka Doncic versus Anthony Edwards. For a lot of people would believe that Luka Doncic is due to make a finals. And if he does, This will be his test to make a finals. I do think that the Mavericks match up well against Minnesota, especially when you consider they have Gafford, they have Derek Lively, two of the most like active bigs when you just watch them play in the league.
They're the best player in the series, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say they have the best player in the series between Anthony Edwards and Luka Doncic. Kyrie Irving is really going to be the X factor here. If Kyrie Irving can explode like 2016 finals Kyrie Irving, I think that the Mavericks should have a relatively easier time dealing with the Timberwolves. I'd be interested to see what happens with Gobert, because there's still a lot of things. There's still a lot of talk about Gobert and the like the way that the Nuggets won three games was literally because they were targeting Gobert every single possession. I don't understand how a defensive player of the year can get targeted in that way. Like when you think about like other sports, when you think of football, like if
he threw two rounds.
But when you think about like a football, like in football, like a cornerback, like you stay away from throwing over there, like because he's such a good defender, you don't want to even try him. Like even in basketball, like we see like Victor Wembanyama, many times players don't even try him. Like players try to get switches off of Jrue Holiday. Players try to get switches off of Jaden McDaniels. Players try to get switches off of so many other Anthony Davis is a player that you're dribbling the ball and you see him guarding you and you're like, no, I want the switch. Bam Adebayo is another one. There's so many players like that in the league. And Rudy Gobert, every single time, gets targeted in the playoffs. And even in the regular season, he gets targeted a bunch. He does a good job of handling it, but it's just like the level of fear that you instill in the offense just isn't there for Rudy Gobert. So I just don't understand how he's still defensive player of the year material when routinely we see opponents beat Rudy Gobert teams by targeting Rudy Gobert. And it's a clear, obvious strategy. I don't think that Kyrie or Luka Doncic are going to do anything different. I think they're also going to target Rudy Gobert, especially because they're perimeter players. And while Rudy Gobert has improved on the perimeter defensively, I don't think that he's improved enough to where we can say that Luka Doncic, if Rudy Gobert switches onto Luka Doncic or if Rudy Gobert switches onto Kyrie Irving and they're on the perimeter, that's an automatic lockup. And I feel like that is what is expected out of a defensive player of the year. And that is something that Rudy Gobert has not lived up to time in and time out.
At the same time, having a guy like that to drop back is good for stopping the kind of pick and roll that the Mavs play, you know, sending Lively downhill and sending Gafford at the rim. And that's been their bread and butter for a lot of this run. They've done it against a Thunder team that clearly didn't have enough inside. And that's a conversation for another day. The way they built that team, I think they needed to add a little bit more to that group to be able to compete in a series like that. And then who'd they play first round? Mavs?
The Clippers.
Yeah, Clippers, they're fine inside, just Zubac mostly. You know, you got Tice there, but Rudy, Towns, that size, that physicality is another story here. And so it will be on the Mavs to kind of spread the floor out. Play some smaller lineups and try to get Gobert off the floor, like you said, but no one's been effective at it yet. And I think some of that's the competition Minnesota's played. But, you know, he's gone against Jokic at this point. He's gone against the first round series. Who'd they play? Phoenix. So
the Suns. But that doesn't, like, as far as big men go, like, that doesn't count. Like, it's,
yeah.
Like, Nurkic they isn't someone who's going to really get the ball. And also, the organization of the Phoenix Suns offense is so terrible that they couldn't even organize.
No, this is a real test. And then again, even if they do get past Dallas, if it's Minnesota, Boston, at that point, it's five out fully, whether it's Porzingis or Horford. So they will have to survive that. Fortunately, you have Reed, you have Towns, you have all these options. There's a flexibility to that roster that's really allowed them to survive that.
I think
and they've rolled with them too.
I think the unsung hero of the Minnesota Timberwolves, besides Mike Conley and Jaden McDaniels, has been Naz Reid.
Oh, he's awesome.
Yeah, I think if the Timberwolves don't have Naz Reid in Game 7, I think the Nuggets win. Because you have Rudy Gobert.
The series could swing on whether
you had Rudy Gobert, Mavs, who was in foul trouble, and you also had Karl-Anthony Towns, who was in foul trouble as well in Game 7. And I don't think the Timberwolves survived that without Naz Reid.
You could say or argue that this series swings on whether Naz Reid does more or whether PJ Washington does more. And yeah. I can't believe what Washington's done, because if we sat here 7 months ago or whenever the season started and said, do you want PJ Washington? Like, you as a Bulls fan, you have been like, maybe, I guess. I, as a Celtics fan, would have been sitting here like, okay, I guess, for the right price. I don't know. It's PJ Washington. He put up stats in Charlotte. He knew he could shoot. You knew he was a guy with size at the wing. But for him to become this X factor on maybe a finals slash championship team, the guy shot 48% from the field, 47% from three. He struggles at the free throw line a little bit, which will be something to watch here. But 18, 8, and 2, he's sort of that swing guy in their offense that can shoot and put, you know, give them some size at the four. It's amazing how that worked out. And it looked like the kind of trade when they sent Grant to Charlotte that was like, oh man, Grant didn't work. We just got to get off him and we're sending this first. I didn't like the trade because I thought they were just giving up on Grant too soon. And Washington, I didn't feel like was a guy that could change that team's fortunes. But man, he changed everything here. That might have been the trade of the year.
Possibly. I mean, I would definitely agree with you that the Mavericks made a trade of the year. But I think also we can argue for the Gafford trade as well, being the trade of the year.
Well, they made both trades of the year.
Yeah. So like between those two. But like I can agree with you that the Mavericks definitely made a trade of the year. Which one, we can get into that like off mic. But I do think the one thing that this PJ Washington development has done is proven my overall point that it's more so about the situation that you're in. I think that Dallas has created an environment that allows PJ Washington to thrive, that allows PJ Washington to fit in well with the team. And we're seeing what he can do now. And that's something that wasn't possible in Charlotte, especially in Charlotte, because Charlotte, I don't even know what the culture is over there in the first place. So seeing him someplace that's more structured, seeing him someplace that actually has expectations to win, it's like a completely different player. It's like night and day. And I think that proves like it's a lot of NBA player success comes from what environment they're put in.
I'm going Wolves in seven here.
I'm not. I'm leaning Mavericks. I'm leaning Mavericks. I'll say that.
It's going to be a grind.
But yeah, that's going to be a good series.
And fortunately for Boston, it looks like they have a bit of a series that they can't just walk through here, but it doesn't look like a series they can lose. But we'll get into that in just a second here. Of course, we're brought to you by Prize Picks. Go over to Prize Picks. This conference finals, hockey, still rolling as well, baseball, all of that. Player projections, pick two or more guys, and their stat projections, whether you think they're going to score more or post more or less than that projection, and you're off to the races. It's that easy. Use our code CLNS for 100% deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CLNS. And if you want tickets this postseason, go to the Game Time app, download it, create an account, use the code CLNS for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Great app, great deals right up until and even after Game Time over there. Views of your seats. They do events and concerts as well. So check it out. Really great app. And now that it's summer, we're expecting 80 degrees here, Nate. This week, go to pxg.com/garden and check out our Garden Report and check out some of the gear they have over there. Great golf attire, a lot of good stuff over there. So check them out and get a discount on your first purchase with the code Garden Report. That's that. So Celtics, Pacers, East Finals. It's interesting, Nate, because we talk about the Nuggets losing. At the moment they lost, I'm like, all right, I think I'm ready to pick the Celtics at this point because I didn't think they could beat Denver. I feel like they can beat Indy, certainly, and then I think they can beat Dallas. Good matchup for them. Minnesota would be challenging, tough, grind of a series, but I think they win that series. So I'm sitting here today ready to pick them to win it all, but right now, still no Porzingis practicing. We're 3 weeks out from the injury. He's going to miss games one and two, and it feels like a little bit more in the series too. The Pacers, I'm not looking past. I mean, they gave the Celtics some runs during the year, and that's what they do. They play teams tough. That's what they did all year. They instill their pace on the game. They play the style they want to, and they force the opponent to play their style. And I don't feel like the Celtics want to sprint up and down the floor. They want to play fast, but not that fast. So at the level Halliburton's playing at, and I know he's been a little inconsistent here, but still initiating that offense, great. You got Siakam here. You got a Turner, rim protector. Neesmith had an awesome game 7 there in New York. I'm respecting this opponent a little bit to stretch this series long. And if Porzingis doesn't come back at all, this could be a series that goes 6-7 games in my mind. But again, the Celtics shouldn't lose this series. I don't think there's any way they should not make the finals here.
First of all, I'm contractually obligated, being a New Yorker, to point out that the injuries have robbed us of what could have been a really good Eastern
Conference
Finals.
Don't even make me think about it.
Between the New York Knicks and the Boston Celtics, especially when you have Jalen Brunson go down in the Game 7. That's just tough. Also, OG Anunoby tried to play, couldn't really play. Josh Hart didn't really look like himself. Also thinking about Mitchell Robinson, really the whole starting five for the besides DiVincenzo.
And then Brunson got hurt.
Yeah, so like I just have to point that out as my fulfill my contractual obligation.
Thanks for reminding me.
You're welcome. Hey man, it's not my fault. I signed the contract. I had to do it. But anyway, returning to what is reality and what is the fact of the Eastern Conference Finals, which is the Indiana Pacers versus the Boston Celtics. I do think, one, this is going to be the first time the Celtics deal with a rim protector in Miles Turner. The Pacers defense isn't that great. It seems like their offense is more of their defense in terms of making opponents so tired by when the opponent is playing defense that they're just too tired to execute on offense. That seems to be their strategy. And for by and large, it's worked. I do think when the in-season tournament happened, I believe, didn't Indiana beat the Celtics in the in-season tournament?
No Porzingis, but they came out and smoked them.
Yeah, so this is where we're going to see how impactful the in-season tournament is for a playoff series.
Because, different team though, no Bruce Brown now, nobody healed now, but you still have
Tyrese Haliburton. Like the main core is still there. Yeah. And that was really their first playoff experience, the playoff environment experience, the in-season tournament. So now it's time to see how that translates to the actual playoffs. Tyrese Haliburton has to show up every game. If he doesn't show up every game, they have no chance. That's just the truth. Siakam too. You have to be able to match that two-headed monster between Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown somehow. And Tyrese Haliburton and Pascal Siakam have to be the guys that do that. I do think the one thing that somehow the Pacers have that advantage on is depth. They just have so many different players that they could throw at you.
I like their bench a little better than Boston's.
Yeah,
it's
like
close,
and it's weird because like going into the season, we were looking at it and we were like, the Celtics are definitely the deepest team or one of the deepest teams in the league. But looking at it now, Indiana seems to be a little bit more deeper than the Celtics. But in terms of the top or starters, the Celtics starters are definitely better. So I definitely expect the Celtics to win this series. But I do think it's going to be tough, especially when you have TJ McConnell coming off the bench. You have Aaron Nesmith, who is a revelation in these playoffs. You have the mainstays, Tyrese Haliburton, Pascal Siakam, Miles Turner. So I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk by any stretch of the imagination, but I do expect the Celtics to win.
Agreed. And I do lament the fact that we don't get Boston, New York. I've been talking about it for 3 months. I think the environment,
you have literally been talking
the style
about it for 3 months.
Of that series, I'm going to probably be talking about it for years to come. I'm going to be like, Nate, in 2034, I'm going to be like, remember that summer we could have had Celtics?
It's going to be your new Lakers Celtics.
Yes. And for that to happen in the same year, that was last June, and it wasn't as close, right? Because the Lakers got swept, and it was like, all right, no Celtics Lakers. And then, you know, the Celtics almost got swept too. So it wasn't close, even though they're both in the conference finals. But you still had that feeling like, oh man, it could be Celtics Lakers, LeBron in the middle. That truly would have been an event, a worldwide event with LeBron in the middle of it and Celtics Lakers and the history there, Boston, LA in the summer. And then we ended up with Heat Nuggets. So I'll still take the fact.
And on top of that, they canceled Winning Time.
Yes. Yes, they did. And then the Lakers lost round one this year. But Celtics-Knicks felt like it was going to happen. We had it booked. Yeah. Lindo was coming to the city. Dan had tickets to game three. The Knicks were up 3-2. And they should have been up 3-0 in the series before Nembhard tossed up that half-court shot that went in. So I'm just sitting here like, come on. The injuries are the biggest reason this isn't happening here, right? And that really stinks because the Knicks were great this year. But man, when you think of these two crowds, when you think about Knicks fans, if it was a healthier team, maybe believing that they could knock off the Celtics and go to the finals for the first time in forever, and the fact that Porzingis would have maybe been in the middle of it, the former Celtic.
You mean the former
and Thibodeau, former the Nick. former Nick, and then Thibodeau, the former Celtic assistant. That just would have been endless storylines. I think the series would have been great. I feel like both teams could have won it if the Knicks were healthier, so it would have been a real series. I'm just devastated we're not getting this. It's every time I hear the fact that it didn't happen, I'm just going to be like, oh. And I want to go to New York next week. It's probably going to be like 80 degrees down there. And
it's going to be bumping. 80 degrees this week, actually.
And now it's Boston, Indiana. I'm sorry, and I'm trying to make the most of it because it's a good basketball series, but there's so little juice from Enjoy a storyline perspective off the court there.
Yeah, I mean, enjoy the corn, man. I mean, I don't really. They had the All-Star game in Indiana this year, and it didn't really seem like there was much to do besides wait for the All-Star game to begin. So I don't know, man. I guess find a Netflix series that you like and watch that in between games when you're in Indiana.
Can the Knicks bounce back from this?
Oh, 1,000%. They just need to be healthy. I'm interested to see the moves that they make in the offseason. I'm interested to see if they try to go out and get Donovan Mitchell, if they try to go out and get another star of that elk, or if they try to get rid of players, if they try to get rid of Julius Randle, if they try to get rid of Mitchell Robinson, things that have been rumored to be at least discussed. So I'm very curious to see what they do. But I think with Jalen Brunson... if you have Jalen Brunson, if you have Josh Hart, if you have Dante DiVincenzo, and maybe they add Mikal Bridges to the mix too. Like if you have the Villanova Knicks, I think the sky's the limit for them. But returning
that'd
to
be tough.
Yeah, but let's give the Pacers their due credit. We've spent so much time.
They came out and shot 22 for 27 in the first half. Yes, that's the craziest thing I've ever seen.
And it's not the first time they've done something like that all season either.
Yeah, they had a better shooting half just this year, as you mentioned. I think they shot 69% and a half in December or something like that. So it's truly an all-time offense. And the Celtics are the greatest offense ever statistically here. Pacers number two. So it's going to be wild. And I'll enjoy the basketball aspect of it. But again, the stories, the buzz, the cities. We're missing out on that here, which is too bad, but it happens. If it's Minnesota, Boston in the finals, that makes up for it for me. Even Dallas, Boston would be pretty good with the Kyrie thing in the middle of it. Luka versus Tatum. And it's interesting here, whether it's, you know, let's give Halliburton a chance here, even though they're the least likely, but Tatum, Edwards, or Luka are going to win their first championship here, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's cool too. I think that's great for the league. The league has been a bit over-reliant on the last era's stars, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, a little over-reliant. So to see the new faces of the league start to rise and the new players of this era start to make their mark in this era is really, really interesting to watch. And I'm just excited to see it all. Honestly, I am. The one I am the most excited for, though, is Anthony Edwards, even though that might hurt my Gobert argument a little bit, but I can completely stomach that if Anthony Edwards is able to get his first win, because that man is a superstar, straight up.
Ooh. We'll nugget off the top of the show here, since we do love baseball. Rafael Devers, first Red Sox ever to homer in 6 straight games.
Good job, Rafi.
All right. That's it for this week. I'm excited to get into these series. We're close to the finals. How many days until the finals start? I think it starts June 6th.
And today's May 20th. So that's 17 days around there.
It looks like the Celtics are going to be there. And I was really devastated last year that they weren't, especially when it got to game 7. So the fact that the Celtics have the chance to be there again here and win it, it's really special. I'm not trying to take that for granted here, even though I've had my doubts about this team all year. They're in a golden position now to end what's a, let's do the math off the top of my head here, 16-year drought at this point. And they've only had one title since 86. So get it done, guys. This is really key moment for the Boston Celtics right here with Denver going down. And they are now officially the title favorites in my mind going forward here. East final start Tuesday, 8 o'clock, West final start Wednesday. We'll try to check in with the Dome Theory crew here throughout. Check out Nate on the cap. Feels like Drake Kendrick's over right now. So we got Rhapsody to talk about. We got Bunch of albums coming out. No Worries next month. Ben Staples this week.
On Friday.
It's been a great year. We talked about it a little bit in January, Nate. 23 was pretty bad. 24 has been, it's not like 2016 level, but it's been something.
I don't know, man. It might get to that level. I mean, we've already seen so many artists drop. Kendrick Lamar was, I don't know if that's really real anymore.
It feels like he could.
Yeah, like it feels like Kendrick Lamar might drop. We already had J. Cole drop. We had Future. Metro still has to release two more albums. So that's really exciting as well. So it might end up being 2016, especially when you think about the parallel between the impact that Future and Metro had in that year and the impact that Future and Metro have had this year as well.
All right. He's Nate Sperlin. I am Bobby Manning. Go get this Dome Theory podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, check out the cap too. Link in the description. And that's it for this week. We'll see you soon. Peace.